And in a few moments, Governor Bill Walker will be headed into the chambers of the Alaska House of Representatives to deliver his address.
The State of the State Address is an annual requirement of the Alaska Constitution, and it's really a platform for the governor to tell Alaska where the state's going and what his policy goals are.
And right now, members of both the State House and Senate are gathered in the House of Representatives chamber. Speaker or House Majority Leader John Coghill. Senate Majority Leader John Coghill is getting up and saying a few remarks. Governor Walker will be escorted into the chambers by Soldotna Republican Senator Peter Michicki and Bethel Democratic Representative Bob Herron, who's the majority whip for the Republican-led House.
What we're seeing there is the two chambers combined for this address, the House and the Senate. There's some formalities they have to go through in order to get themselves assembled for the address.
Walker, go ahead. Oh, well, Walker's an independent, and he was elected in November, unseating Republican Governor Sean Parnell.
Walker was a registered Republican when he was campaigning. He ultimately renounced his party membership to create a merge ticket with a Democratic nominee for governor. That's Byron Mallott. Mallott is now our lieutenant governor. Looks like some activity down the hall from the chambers.
And the governor is about to arrive here.
Thank you very much. President Kevin Meyer, Speaker Mark Chenault, Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott, members of the legislature, members of the cabinet, and my fellow Alaskans, it is an honor to stand before you. I'm humbled to serve Alaska as your governor, and you have my pledge that I will always put Alaska first. I will forever be ready to work with anyone who shares this value. Tonight, I deliver the State of the State Address. This is a rare privilege to which I owe so much to my family. I want to begin by recognizing my First Lady of 37 years and now Alaska's First Lady, Donna Walker. As all of you who have met her know, she is one amazing, smart lady who truly has a servant's heart. I also want to introduce two of our four children, our daughter Lindsay Hobson and son Jordan Walker. Next, I want to recognize my friend and Alaska's Lieutenant Governor, Byron Mallott. And I also want to recognize his bride of 42 years, Tony Mallott. Donna and I treasure our friendship with you both and with your entire large family. I also want to thank the co-chairs of our transition team, Anna Hoffman of Bethel and Rick Halford from Dillingham. I want to thank them for all their hard work. Hundreds of Alaskans contributed to our administration transition process. Alaska is better for it. Lieutenant Governor Malott and I express our profound gratitude. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I am committed to carrying forward the transition team's vision of creating a more collaborative approach to solving Alaska's problems. Now that we're in office, Byron and I have made a few changes. Traditionally, the Lieutenant Governor's office is at the far end of the third floor, and now he has an office right next to mine, about 6 feet from my office. And he has a standing invitation. My calendar is open to Lieutenant Governor Malott, and he has a standing invitation to attend every meeting that I have. And I have a better meeting because of that, so I thank you very much for that, Byron. Alaska is a resource development state. As we've witnessed this past year, our economy rises and falls on the tide. Yet, we remain prosperous and blessed in so many ways. We're forged in adversity, tempered by the elements, and bound by the faith that when we hold true to our values, Alaskans emerge stronger and ready to seize the best for our future. As owners of Alaska's resources, we must make decisions based on our long-term fiduciary responsibility, not on short-term political expedience. It is our obligation to make sure all Alaskans experience the bounty and opportunity this state provides. Our challenges mean we cannot afford zero-sum, zero-result politics. This administration has put a premium on solutions and strong ideas, regardless of where or from whom they come. Being an Alaskan transcends party affiliation. As my friend Senator Lisa Murkowski often says, no one political party has a monopoly on good ideas. I know I speak for everyone in this room when I say we look forward to working together with Alaska's federal delegation. Donna and I were honored to attend the swearing-in of Senator Dan Sullivan earlier this month. I've also spoken with Senator Murkowski and Congressman Don Young. We pledged to work together to make the most of our God-given resources. And yes, this means at long last responsibly accessing the vast oil reserves under ANWR. We can, we must, we will. It's beyond time. Members of this legislature, I am so honored to stand before you. I look forward to working together to overcome the challenges before us. The men and women in this room are no strangers to adversity. Some of you have beaten cancer. Others have known childhood poverty and overcome tremendous challenges in life. You are fishermen, educators, lawyers, farmers and veterans, contractors, healthcare providers, pilots, engineers, accountants, a miner, and yes, even a reindeer herder, to list just a few. Uniting us all is a shared love for our state and our people, and a desire to serve, to give back, and to make a difference. The opportunity and sacred obligation we have over the next 4 years is to leave Alaska better than we received it, and to secure blessings for future generations. Opportunity is what inspires and motivates Alaskans. The desire to get up, put in a good day's work, and build a better future. There are those of us here by birth, and many of us who are here by choice. But whether your family has been here for 5 years, five generations, or five millennia, we are all Alaskans. And we are descendants of adventurers, of dreamers, the restless and survivors, those who refused to accept no for an answer, those who saw opportunity when others simply saw cold temperatures and impossibly high peaks. Some of us are descendants of Alaska's first people, resourceful, resilient, deeply rooted in the land. Alaska continues to prove its bounty to those who feed a village with a whale, a family with a moose, turn logs into a house, bones into art, and wind and rushing water into electricity. This is who we are, Alaskans. And there is power in who we are and where we live. And that's what gives me and those in this room great hope for the future, despite the challenges at hand. Tomorrow, I will present to this body the state of the budget. We know that Alaska is experiencing a significant drop in revenue. The price of oil has dropped by more than 50% over the past 6 months. This has moved us from a $7 million per day deficit 6 months ago to a $10 million per day deficit today. This is unsustainable. It's unacceptable. We can and will do better. As we know, this isn't the first time our young state has been through these times. Many of you in this room served during the days of $9 a barrel oil during the recessions of the 1980s. Today, we have fewer than 500,000 barrels per day flowing through the pipeline. The impact of low oil prices is intensified by low production. Today, we're faced with a $3.5 billion deficit, and as I said, using $10 million every day from our savings. Some might call this a crisis. I call this a challenge and an opportunity. We have an opportunity to make impactful and constructive changes, to challenge the traditional ways of doing business. Prior to the 64 earthquake, my family had the only home building business in Valdez. When the earthquake struck, it devastated our community to the point we had to relocate the entire town. As a result of the quake, not only did we lose all of our materials and tools, we lost our livelihoods. We faced a down period with few assets. We could not practice our trade since new homes could not be built in the old town, and the new town site was not ready for construction. But we never stopped looking forward. Our focus was fixed on rebuilding and aspiring to future prosperity. We had to continue on. We knew we had to do things differently. We had to be creative. We had to pull together as a family. And we made sacrifices, lots of sacrifices. While there were no houses to be built, the school and post office were open and needed to be cleaned. To financially survive, we seized the opportunity, and the Walker family became janitors. Our hard work paid off. When the new town site was ready some years later, we were able to invest and buy houses in the old town, have them moved onto foundations in the new town, and resold. However, when the house mover from Anchorage left Valdez without moving any of our houses we had purchased, we once again had to adjust. We became house movers. This is what I learned from my parents. Don't panic when times are tough. Make a plan. Stick to it. Stay focused. Stay positive, and get to work. Now is not the time to sound the alarm, my fellow Alaskans. Now is the time to pull together, to make a plan, sharpen our focus, and get to work. We have the tools, we have the ingenuity, we have the team, and we will work our way out and build an even stronger Alaska. On December 26th, I took immediate action. I issued an administrative order directing that all mega projects stand down until we can assess their overall cost and benefits to the state. I thank the leadership of both bodies here tonight for your offers to assist and for your helpful suggestions regarding our state's financial situation. We have reached out to all Alaskans to solicit their input on the budget situation as well. My website has a forum for anyone to use, and we have received thousands of responses. We have asked students at three of the University of Alaska campuses to sort and analyze the suggestions. My staff tells me this is something called crowdsourcing. I just call it reaching out to Alaskans. Reducing energy costs across Alaska is one of the highest priorities for my administration. We are the most energy-rich state in the nation. God has blessed us with almost limitless resources. It is unacceptable that so many of my fellow Alaskans wake up each morning in a cold house, as I did growing up in rural Alaska. If Alaska was a country, we'd be among the top 8 energy producers in the world, and yet we have the highest cost energy in the nation. We can and must do better. This administration has made it a priority to reduce energy consumption at state-owned and public buildings, including schools. Increasing energy efficiency will allow state dollars to be better concentrated on the services provided. In Alaska, when it comes to our public buildings and schools, wasted energy is government waste. Every growing economy in the world has one thing in common, and that's low-cost energy. This administration will not rest until Alaska is squarely on track to become an economic powerhouse thanks to low-cost energy that will bolster and diversify our economy. This legislature has done good work in this area over the past few years, from wisely incentivizing natural gas storage in Cook Inlet to recognizing the importance of a large diameter gas line, to investing in renewable energy projects and conservation. Your leadership has made a difference. Thirty-seven years ago, Donna and I cheered and actually danced in the streets with hundreds of Alaskans as the first barrel of oil from Prudhoe Bay arrived in Valdez. A few short months later, Donna and I were married, and I began working on a large volume gas line and LNG project. Alaska, it is time to build the gas line to provide gas to Alaskans and liquefied natural gas to the world markets. Under my administration, we will finally begin building the Alaska gas line to Tidewater. I'm going to say that one more time, because I've waited 37 years to say that. Under my administration, we will begin building the gas line to Tidewater. It will be done with Alaska Hire to the maximum extent allowed under the law. And it will comply with Alaska's constitutional mandate that our resources be developed for the maximum use and benefit of Alaskans. I was honored to have the president of a major Japanese energy consortium travel from Tokyo to Juneau last month for our inauguration. I met with the Japanese delegation the following morning. Actually, it was as my first official meeting as your governor. About 10 days later, they returned to Juneau with a memorandum of understanding. Since signing that MOU, other significant LNG buyers in Asia have contacted me expressing similar interest. In fact, on our way to church on Christmas Eve, I received such a call from a major Japanese company. I took the call. The gas is available, the market is responding, and we know Alaska is the crossroads of the world. It's time we engage those markets, diversify our economy, and create long-term fiscal stability and job growth. And it's beyond time to complete the work those in this room have started on this critical project, and I thank you. It is also long past time for Alaska to focus on value-added job opportunities with the extraction of our natural resources. Again, I believe that is also our constitutional mandate. When we export our resources as raw materials and import a finished product, we serve others as a colony. But when we make something from our natural resources and export a finished product, that's an economy. LNG is a finished product, as is fertilizer from Nikiski, processed fish, produce from the Mat-Su, boats built in Ketchikan. We should be making and exporting cement north of Fairbanks, given all the limestone available and the rail and highway infrastructure available. We should be refining products from our own oil. All we need is affordable energy. A really great example of value-added industry is right here in Juneau. In 1986, two local entrepreneurs, Marcy and Jeff Larson, convinced 88 people to invest $5,000 each to start what is now the largest brewery in Alaska. Today, the Alaskan Brewing Company employs about 70 full-time workers in Juneau alone. They also load out about 4 containers a day of finished product bound for destinations across Alaska, the lower 48, and beyond. And the Alaska Brewing Company has become a leader in energy-efficient commercial brewing by developing and employing innovative technology and reducing their diesel consumption by 70%. We have a duty to future generations to make the most of our resources. We can do this with value-added projects. If Marcy and Jeff can create 70 jobs utilizing Alaska's water, just imagine what we can do applying the same ingenuity to our vast fish, oil, natural gas, timber, and mineral resources. And perhaps our greatest renewable source is the majesty and allure of Alaska itself, which draws nearly 2 million visitors every year. Our tourism industry creates almost 50,000 jobs and has a direct economic impact of nearly $4 billion each year. This is a healthy and vital industry which showcases a dynamic partnership between private enterprise and state and local government, an industry that has potential of limitless growth and contribution to our economic well-being. This evening, there are tens of thousands of Alaskans with no health insurance who could be covered at no cost to the state. These are mothers and fathers, sons and daughters, entire families who will go to bed tonight in fear. Fear that despite their best efforts, they are just one injury or one diagnosis away from losing everything. That's wrong. That's unacceptable. And we're going to put an end to that on my watch. I began taking steps to accept the 100% federally funded Medicaid expansion on my first day in office. Many in the faith-based community, the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, and other job creators. See, Medicaid expansion isn't just good for the health of our citizens, it's good for the health of our economy. It is estimated this could create as many as 4,000 new healthcare jobs in Alaska. My selection of Val Davidson as the Commissioner of Health and Social Services was the first step in accomplishing this objective. We have begun the process of extending federally funded coverage to thousands of our friends, neighbors, co-workers. Thank you, Commissioner Davidson, for all your hard work in this area. The health of our communities and villages is also a top priority of my administration. The epidemics of rape, sexual assault, and domestic violence plaguing our state must end. We all know the numbers, but even one case is one too many. Often lost in the facts and figures are the victims themselves. These are real lives, women, children, men, families torn apart, and each of us, all of us, deserve to feel safe. The well-being of Alaska's families, especially our children, is something Donna and I and each of you care about deeply. In 2009, Donna worked as a caseworker for the Office of Children's Services. She saw firsthand the heartbreaking neglect and abuse being suffered by our most vulnerable population, Alaska's children. Her first official act as First Lady was agreeing to serve as honorary chair of the Alaska Children's Trust, an organization that works to provide real solutions to preventing child abuse and neglect. I have asked my commissioners to look to states that lead the pack in fighting these epidemics. I will also ask our state and local officials to help us develop community-based solutions. We will continue to work alongside the agencies doing strong work in these areas as we create a solid action plan. I also ask this legislature, make Alaska the next state to pass Aaron's Law. This is the bill that will enable our schools to further implement a proven age-appropriate program to help children identify sexual abuse and seek help. Members of the legislature, if you send this bill to my desk, I will sign it. And we will take an important step toward protecting the lives of so many young, precious Alaskans. We thank the men and women who serve in the Alaska National Guard with honor and integrity. Because of the sacrifices and commitment you have made to our state and nation, we honor your service. Tomorrow, the Attorney General, Craig Richards, will name an independent special investigator to examine what went wrong in the Alaska National Guard. That investigator will have full access to all paper and electronic evidence to get to the bottom of the allegations of sexual assault, misconduct, and cover-up. As Commander-in-Chief of the Alaska National Guard, let me assure you, the perpetrators will be brought to justice. They will face expulsion, incarceration, or both. I also want to thank the men and women in the military and law enforcement who put their lives at risk every day to protect us. On May 1st, Sergeant Patrick Scott Johnson and Trooper Gabriel Rich were killed in the line of duty in Tanana. Our thoughts and prayers are with their families and those families of other law enforcement officials and servicemen and women who have made the ultimate sacrifice. Please join me in honoring the families of Sergeant Johnson and Trooper Rich, who so graciously accepted our invitation to be with us here this evening. To our military and law enforcement families, I speak for all Alaska and say thank you for your sacrifice you make daily for us. Your fathers, your husbands, your mothers and daughters, these are the heroes who protect our freedoms and keep us safe. These are the gallant and the brave who help us all sleep a little better at night. Please join me once again in thanking and honoring all of the men and women in uniform for the sacrifices in their service. Now I want to turn to education. We are perhaps facing the largest budget deficit in Alaska's history. To get on track during critical financial times, we must make difficult decisions. And sometimes we have to make sacrifices. We will protect education funding and insulate it from the state's fiscal situation to the greatest extent possible. We will continue to invest in education as it is one of the highest priorities of this state, but not at the rate we could have when oil was over $100 a barrel. $46 per barrel oil brings about a new day in Alaska. We must respond prudently and very carefully. So I ask educators to pull together, be resourceful and efficient. I hold our educators in the highest regard. I will do all I can and work with the teachers, principals, administrators to assist and provide for the needs of our schools statewide. Public education is a constitutionally mandated responsibility. I have not and I will not forget that. The days of exporting our resources with an imported workforce must come to an end. Alaskans are some of the hardest working people in the world. Let's make sure our youth get the training and skills they need to fill the jobs of today and tomorrow. We do that by being creative, parents stepping up, teachers and administrators thinking outside the box. I began my education in a Quonset hut in Fort Greeley. While the school facilities were a bit rustic, the high quality of education I received inside those walls is what I remember so much. I thank each and every teacher who has taken on the high calling of educating our children. While we certainly have room for improvement in our schools, we should also celebrate our achievements. In Nevada last month, at one of the toughest high school wrestling tournaments in the country, Kotzebue senior Josh Roteman won his weight class and earned the tournament's Outstanding Wrestling Award. Josh is the first All-American athlete from Kotzebue High School and has been accepted to the U.S. Naval Academy. This past spring, Christine Fenderson of Lathrop High School in Fairbanks captured a silver medal at the United States Decathlon Super Quiz, a competition that attracts teams from around the world. These individual successes serve as a reminder that the next generation has the talent and drive to succeed. It's up to us to provide the opportunity for them to do so. We need to increase career and technical education opportunities in Alaska. We can build upon the success of programs like the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center. There are other wonderful examples in the Mat-Su Valley, Kenai, Nome, Seward, Anchorage, Kotzebue, and Barrow, to name but a few. For those who choose college, Alaska is fortunate to have great universities across the state. It is time for the state to develop a different relationship with our university. We all too often reach out to Lower 48 consultants without first determining if the same or better analysis can be purchased here within our university system or in our private sector. Arguably, the greatest knowledge of Arctic policy studies can be found at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. The Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute here in Juneau serves as a leading authority on fisheries management. And the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center serves the state through research, education, and training activities. These are fundamental to marine science and the competitiveness of the Alaska seafood industry in meeting important workforce needs. Last week, I held our first cabinet meeting. We have renamed the governor's conference room to the cabinet room, and I plan to use it extensively and regularly with the cabinet. At my invitation, also attending last week's cabinet meeting, were the University of Alaska president, the Alaska Railroad CEO, and the Alaska Permanent Fund CEO. This is a standing invitation for these state entities to be represented in cabinet meetings. The purpose is to ensure that we are fully harnessing our university infrastructure and financial resources. I also want to thank this legislature for all you have done on the critical issue of Arctic policy. For the next 2 years, our nation will chair the Arctic Council. Were it not for Alaska, the United States would not be an Arctic nation at all. For this reason, of the estimated 20 meetings the United States will hold, most will be held here in Alaska. I have established a cabinet-level position to address Arctic issues. I've named Craig Fleener to the post. As you may know, Craig has previously served as a permanent member of the Arctic Council. Craig will be a vigorous advocate for Alaska's interests as the Council addresses Arctic transportation, navigation, tribal issues, climate change, telecommunications, and public and private partnerships for Arctic development. Given current oil prices, there's been a lot of discussion about the fiscal challenges here in Alaska. While I don't dispute the numbers, I do dispute the gloom and doom. To those who say Alaska's finest days are behind us, I say they are looking in the wrong direction. Governor Wally Hickel used to say, before we had money, we had guts. Alaska has trillions of dollars of value trapped under our ground and in our waters. Since taking office on December 1st, I have twice been to Washington, D.C. for meetings at the highest level to discuss infrastructure and regulatory advances we need to fully develop our resources. The potential for our oil fields and mining prospects are nearly limitless, but we can't keep and have the same fights with national leaders and expect a different result. The facts are on our side. We can and we will use them, but we can also listen, address the agency concerns head on, and forge a path forward. And Alaska's resources aren't just under our feet, they're also under our boats. Fisheries remains the state top employer, and we will work with the crucial sector to strengthen sustainable fisheries. In Alaska, every boat is a small family business. We will work together with the industry to keep boots on the deck and bolster demand across the globe for our high-quality products. We thank all these industries for countless jobs they provide and for the solid investments they continue to make in Alaska's communities. My goal is to continue to work with them to further develop these resources. We will do it on Alaska's time frame and follow the constitutional mandate to develop them for the maximum use and benefit to Alaskans. To me, this means having Alaskans do the work. I have long been a fierce advocate for local hire. I want our North Slope workers to commute from Minto, not Mississippi. And Houston, Alaska, not Houston, Texas. It will be a priority of this administration to buy Alaskan when possible. Whether it's professional services, food, equipment, or just about anything else, I urge all Alaskans to do the same. Unfortunately, one of the biggest commodities we export from Alaska is our money. Buying Alaska is something we can all do in our businesses and personal lives. When we make a purchase out of state rather than support local businesses, we end the local multiplier effect. This damages economic growth and sustainability. Think about which business will be making the Little League donations, the Little Dribbler donations, and the contribution to the youth hockey donations. Let's help those businesses here in Alaska, the ones in our hometown that help us. That is part of what Alaska First means. When Alaska became a state, approximately 50% of the food we consumed was grown, raised, and harvested here in Alaska. Today, that percentage is under 5%. We can reverse that. Our administration will have a renewed commitment to manage our wildlife and fisheries population for abundance in order to provide for subsistence and economic needs of Alaskans. You know, we should also be marketing our vegetables grown in the Mat-Su Valley and elsewhere in the state, like we market the Copper River red salmon from Cordova. Do you know that our carrots are 8 times sweeter than those grown in California? You spend 2 summers manning a booth at the Palmer State Fair and you'll learn this kind of stuff. Alaskans, there are challenges ahead. But so many of our most significant accomplishments have come in the face of adversity and in times when we have worked together with no agenda but to strengthen and prosper our state. I remember so well Alaskans reaching out together to fight for statehood and to help those in need after the 64 earthquake. I remember as a teenager driving to Fairbanks from Valdez to help our friends there following the 1967 flood. Whether it's a fuel shortage in Nome, forest fires on the peninsula in the Mat-Su, flooding on the Yukon, the threat of a military base closure in the interior, or the closure of a pulp mill in Ketchikan, we rise and survive as one when we support our fellow Alaskans. When we build each other up and we work together, nothing can shake us. We persevere. We work hard. We dare to achieve. I urge all Alaskans, be cognizant of the fiscal situation that's facing us. And like my family following the earthquake, do not let yourself become overwhelmed by the enormity of the task at hand. Rather, let us understand the work that must be done and look ahead toward rebuilding and creating a prosperous future. To the members of this esteemed body, I say to you that yes, the task ahead of us is great, but it will not consume us. Our foundation is one of ingenuity, camaraderie, and hard work. It is time to put these principles into practice, make the tough decisions, tackle the work ahead of us. The public is looking to us to take action, and we must deliver. And just like those generations before us who so bravely built this great state, we must not seek the Republican answer or the Democratic answer. We must seek the right answer for Alaska. It will be tough, and we may not always agree, but I'm confident we will be pulling from the same end of the rope to achieve the best outcome for Alaskans. Let's not focus on party lines, but on Alaska's bottom lines. Let's honor the legacy of our past as we create opportunity for all who look north to the future. We are Alaskans, and we're darn proud of it. As the late Senator Ted Stevens once famously says, "The heck with politics. Let's do what's best for Alaska." And that, my fellow Alaskans, is exactly what we will do. May God bless you, and may God bless the state of Alaska.
Alaska Governor Bill Walker's first State of the State address, live from the state capitol in Juneau. I'm Casey Kelly.
And I'm Jeremy Shea.
And Jeremy, a lot of themes touched on in Walker's speech there. I wrote down a few of them, such as cooperation.
Yeah, he talked about, this was a recurring theme from his campaign too, trying to be inclusive and cooperate. He mentioned one of the laugh lines in there was his staff telling him that he was soliciting input from the university system for ways to address some of Alaska's challenges. And the laugh line was that they called that crowdsourcing, but he, of course, had not heard that term.
Yes. you know, and themes that we've probably heard from governors in the past. Of course, Walker's longtime interest in an Alaska gas line.
Yeah, that was probably one of the firmest statements he made during his address. He said, under his administration, they will build a natural gas pipeline to Tidewater. He actually said it twice, for emphasis. He said, been waiting a long time to be able to say that.
And I would say that would probably be one of the bigger applause lines of the speech as well. Just, you know, it's been kind of a concern, I think, of many lawmakers that with the new administration coming in, would there be any changes to the gas line policy of the state? And Walker emphasizing that he's on board with building a gas line to Tidewater.
Yeah, and part of the concern from the Republican-led Senate majority that they expressed the other day was that, you know, there was that shakeup in the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation's board, AGDC's board, and how that would affect things down the road, if it would disrupt timelines. Some similar concerns, maybe a little bit more conciliatory from the House-led majority, House Republican-led majority today that we had heard earlier in the day. And it also feeds into some of the fiscal problems that, you know, the state's facing huge multi-billion dollar budget deficits from low oil prices. And the idea is that building this pipeline will help, you know, generate a new source of revenue for the state of Alaska.
Right. And, of course, the fiscal situation is going to be addressed in more depth tomorrow with the State of the Budget speech, which is the first time in almost 15 years that an Alaska governor has done a State of the Budget speech.
I think it was 9 years. I think it was 2006.
9 years? Yeah. Okay, yeah. I knew it was many years. And, you know, it's the last time that there was a State of the Budget speech, they were talking about what to do with a $1 billion surplus, and so a little bit different situation now. Walker has, in the past, with speeches, relied a lot on his own autobiography to cite examples. And in this speech, linking the challenge of the state's budget deficit to the challenge of his family overcoming the 1964 earthquake in Valdez.
Right. And one of the big contrasts from last year when Governor Sean Parnell delivered the speech, he wanted it to be the education session, the education legislative session. This year, he brought up education, and he actually hinted at, you know, expecting reduced school funding in the coming year just because of the dire situation with the budget.
Walker's message, of course, from his parents, don't panic. Maybe Douglas Adams said that as well in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But another, you know, applause line there. He said, you know, we will work our way out and build an even stronger Alaska from this. That was his message.
One of the other topics that also contrasted from last year is, you know, Governor Sean Parnell had his Choose Respect campaign. Governor Walker did just address some of the sexual abuse issues that the state faces, but he didn't actually use the phrase choose respect. He did say, however, that he will sign Aaron's Law if it comes to his desk. Aaron's Law was a bill introduced last year by Democratic Representative Garen Tarr and kind of failed at the end of the session there. It's been reintroduced this year by Representative Garen Tarr and House Majority Leader Sharice Millett, a Republican.
Mm-hmm. And he also said that tomorrow his Attorney General, Craig Richards, will be appointing a special investigator to look into the abuse issues in the National Guard. And so I know that's been a big issue that a lot of legislators say they're interested in tackling this session. I don't know if any of them have talked about hearings at all or if they're going to see what the results of this special investigator are.
He had a really firm line that, you know, whatever the allegations are borne out by the investigation, the perpetrators will be brought to justice or something to that effect. Yeah.
So energy costs, just to switch gears a little bit here, low-cost energy is another priority for the Walker administration, and he build it as a way to address the state's budget issues. He said increasing energy efficiency will allow the state dollars to be better concentrated on services provided.
Right. And he actually talked about certain industries that might spring up if energy is cheap. I hadn't heard this one before. He talked about exporting cement north of Fairbanks by rail, exporting some farm and ag projects products as well. He mentioned carrots. It's one of Representative, or now Senator Bill Stoltz's favorite points, mm-hmm. how sweet the carrots are from the Mattsu Valley.
And he mentioned a successful business here in Juneau, Alaskan Brewing Company, as being an example of a product that is exported from Alaska and very successfully so for 30 years now.
Right.
And he, you know, talked about the value added. So that's, you know, the idea that we're extracting these natural resources. We should be doing something to add value to them before they go overseas.
Okay. Yeah. And he also mentioned one other thing with healthcare. He sort of doubled down on one of the first things he did on his first day in office, I think it was, and that was, you know, choosing to accept federally funded Medicaid payments for, you know, it's mostly low-income households and low-income Alaskans. Yeah.
So we have about two more minutes here, but a few other issues that he touched on. One of them was Arctic policy, and Craig Fleener, who was his original running mate when he was running for governor as an independent before he joined tickets with Democrat Byron Mlott. Craig Fleener had been his running mate as lieutenant governor candidate, has been appointed to, he said, a cabinet-level position checking out or doing Arctic policy issues. And this kind of dovetails with some news today that the Obama administration has issued an executive order that this will guide the administration on Arctic policy, and the United States is expected to chair the Arctic Council for the next year. So that's kind of dovetails with some national news that's going on this week.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. I heard that. Well, we're going to get to one of the political party's responses in just a minute. Historically, we've offered the governor's opposing political party an opportunity to respond as part of this broadcast. Governor Walker, of course, has no party. He's an independent. So this year, we tried things a little bit differently. We offered a few minutes to both parties to pre-record statements to include after the State of the State address. The Republicans declined our offer, but we did record this statement earlier today with Senator Berta Gardner, the leader of the Senate Democrats.
Hello, I'm Senator Berta Gardner. I represent Midtown Anchorage and all Alaskans in the State Senate, and I'm honored to serve as leaders of the Senate Democrats in the 29th Alaska Legislature. House and Senate Democrats look forward to working together with Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Mallott, along with all of our colleagues in the legislature. As we begin the job of constructing a budget, we must prioritize the essential functions of government. We believe in protecting quality education for all children, in promoting safe and healthy communities, and in supporting families and working people across the state. These values will guide us in making difficult decisions for the common good of Alaska. Educating our children in a quality public school education system is the very best insurance for our long-term future. So we'll continue to fight to protect public education and to provide our children with the resources necessary for them to be competent, successful citizens in the 21st century. We all believe in fostering a vibrant and efficient university system, a center for research, an incubator of innovation and new industry. And we must continue to expand vocational and technical education opportunities for Alaskans who wish to be part of the new industries. Whether you live in a small village somewhere in this vast state or in downtown Anchorage, you should feel safe in your home and in your community. Assuring public and personal safety is a basic function of government. We believe it should be a reality for all Alaskans. We work to make our homes and communities safe. We must also strive to make them healthy. We support this administration's dedication to the Medicaid expansion. This will increase access to health care for thousands of Alaskans, create thousands of new jobs, and reduce costs for those of us who have private insurance. Taking advantage of a cost-saving opportunity to grow our economy and make Alaskans healthier is common sense. Healthy Alaska also mandates that we address the alcohol and drug abuse that wreaks havoc on families, drags down our economy, and steals hope. Treatment does work. Recovery is possible. And cuts to programs supporting treatment and recovery are pennywise and pound foolish. We must do all we can to end this epidemic. Finally, a stable economy is key to achieving our goals. Our resources remain the envy of the world. By working together as Alaskans, we can realize our long-held dream of a gas pipeline. Our generation has benefited from oil. Our children and our grandchildren will benefit from bringing Alaska's gas to the world. Energy costs have impeded our progress and in some places totally disabled communities. A gas pipeline done correctly will lower heating costs for our homes and our businesses, allowing Alaskans to prosper. Democrats have always fought for Alaska's fair share of our common resource wealth. In the recent past, when we had a fair share, Democrats and Republicans worked together to save $17 billion. That foresight will help us now to weather the current fiscal storm. Recognizing that addressing our budget will be difficult and sometimes contentious, Democrats have introduced legislation to safeguard the permanent fund by amending the Constitution to protect the fund's earnings. Originally created to help us save our wealth as we endured and anticipated ups and downs of oil prices, we believe Alaskans want to see the fund protected in the Constitution. We hope our Republican colleagues will join us to pass legislation ensuring future generations will share in the benefit of our vast resource wealth. The economic situation we face today demands dedicated effort, reasoned thought, and innovative ideas. Let's embrace working together and drop the partisanship. Alaska needs leadership now. We must end all wasteful spending and begin an open dialogue to confront the harsh realities of low oil prices and falling production. The administration has started the conversation by halting mega projects the state cannot afford. We applaud the governor and look forward to continuing the effort to find savings and efficiencies at all levels of government, carefully weighing the impacts of our decisions on our economy and on the people who live and work here. Despite the realities we face today, we remain optimistic, not because of our leaders or because of our wealth. Our optimism springs from the capable and creative people who call this place home. And I call on all Alaskans to join together. Let's face these challenges head on, not only for now, but for generations to come. In the past, wise leaders found solutions from among Alaskans, and we carry that tradition forward now. Thank you for your time tonight.